For decades, the United States has operated military bases around the Middle East and currently have around 30,000 stationed in the area. I'm Skynell Hughes, and on this edition of 360 View, we're going to look at the current justification by the United States and the role their presence is playing in achieving peace in the Middle East. Let's get started. The earliest civilizations in history were established around 3500 BC in the region now known as the Middle East. Even though the term was not given to the land between Arabia and India until the 1850s by the British India Office. So why is the oldest civilization needing the help of one of the newest? Well, I don't want to question the original intent of the United States, as I would like to think it was in the name of keeping the peace in the world. But even if that was true in the beginning, prior to the United States pulling out of Afghanistan, the U.S. had more than 100,000 in Afghanistan alone. That could be extremely concerning. And sadly, 2,402 never made it back home to the United States alive. And more than 20,000 were wounded in action. What good was their sacrifice? Because within a year of the United States pulling out, the Taliban regime has almost gained full control of Afghanistan again. The same could be also said following the withdrawal from many American troops in Iraq as well. Now, but following the attack which killed three American soldiers in Jordan, the U.S. military started a series of strikes, including 125 munitions against 85 militia targets in Syria and Iraq. And this might just be the beginning, as more and more pressure is being formed on the current administration to take more action. Now, this is all while the United States troops stationed in the Middle East are there with the permission of each country's government. Well, that's except for Syria. And with more than 160 recent attacks on U.S. troops across Iraq and Syria since October, it's apparent the residents of the country are not as happy. So what exactly is the United States doing with so many deployed service members to the Middle East? And whose interests are they exactly serving? Well, let's discuss with our panel. Colonel Rob Manis, who is a former Air Force colonel and a radio talk show host, as well as Scott Ritter, a geopolitical analyst and author, former U.S. military and U.N. inspector. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen, on this issue that we've been debating for decades, and yet here we still are in somewhat of the same situation. I want to start with you, Scott. What is the main objective of the United States of stationing American troops in Syria and Iraq in this present time?
Well, I mean, we go back to, you know, I guess, the beginning, the Carter Doctrine, the decision made that the Middle East is in oils, the protection of oil supplies are the in the strategic national interests of the United States. I was part of the Marine Corps' rapid deployment force back in the 1980s, ready to deploy on a moment's notice. I deployed to Saudi Arabia during Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, to respond to Iraq's invasion of Kuwait, an invasion that we made the case threatened Saudi Arabian oil fields in eastern Saudi Arabia, therefore triggering the need to intervene. And then we sort of lost track. It became not so much about securing oil as saving face. We didn't get rid of Saddam Hussein after Desert Storm. And for the next decade, we embarked on policies of regime change, using United Nations sanctions to strangle Saddam until we could build up a case for war premised on a lie that got us involved in a conflict in 2003. Couple on that, the global war on terror, 9/11, Afghanistan. I'll tell you what, we don't know why we're in the Middle East today. We're sort of trapped in this, in this legacy. We were there. The target keeps moving, and now we're stuck. We can't articulate any reasonable premise for having troops in Syria. Right. Or sustaining a military presence in Iraq.
Well, Scott, and I want to bring Colonel Manis into this, because let's go back to what you said. was it really sold to the American people that the reason why we were sending our troops over there originally was for oil? I mean, I can understand it for national security. I can understand it for to fight the war on terrorism. Heck, Vietnam was to fight the spread of communism. Was it really sold to the American people, and did they understand that they were going over there for oil in that original intent, Colonel Manis?
Well, yeah, Scott pointed out, rightly so, the original strategic vision of the United States for that area had it signing up to that the free flow of oil from the Persian Gulf was a vital national interest for the United States. That was well before even the Ayatollah took over Iran, I believe. So, yeah, that's exactly what the purpose was for the war in Kuwait to boost or to boot Saddam back out of Kuwait. Of course, Kuwait and Saudi Arabia are kind of our quasi allies at the time, too. So that didn't help anybody's case that was opposing that. But today, Scotty, is exactly what Scott just said. We don't really have a mission on the sand in the Middle East right now. And those troops should have been pulled out of there years ago. There should never have been American troops without the approval of Congress in Syria, where they are still today. And every regime, every administration is responsible for not doing the right things that led to the deaths of those three soldiers. Now, it's debatable about the U.S. Navy task force that's with the coalition now trying to protect commercial shipping in the Red Sea from the Houthi terrorists and Iranian backed, of course. But would we even be there at all with our naval fleet if we didn't still say that we needed to do things like keep ISIS from recreating itself after the Trump administration completely destroyed it, or protect those oil fields in northern Syria? Protect them for who? From who? I mean, they're not doing us any good. And it just raises the issue in a positive light that why we should be going back to being energy dominant, because none of these places really matter, except for from an alliance perspective nowadays, than they did back in the day when we said, hey, the free flow of oil coming out of the Persian Gulf is our vital interest. We did that on the heels of the gas shortages, et cetera, so the politicians were able to get away with it. But today, there's no mission. Those soldiers shouldn't have been there on that ground. And we should be pulling out right now. Unfortunately, it's going to look bad for us. So the generals, I'm sure, advising President Biden not to do it, because we've just had a bunch killed. And, oh, by the way, those 85 targets we hit, we telegraphed to the Iranians and their people what we were going to do and where we were going to hit. So we hit a bunch of empty holes, probably didn't even destroy but maybe 1 or 2% of their command and control and communications equipment.
Okay, so that begs to question right now, and Scott, you can answer this. Military intelligence just is not making common sense. We are warning those before we strike them. We don't necessarily have a clear mission as to why we're there. So what is the actual thinking, and who is actually pulling these triggers to keep the United States in these fields, protecting these oil fields, especially knowing that the series of air and drone strikes in Iraq and against Iranian proxies, there's word that, like you said, the Iraqi government will ask the U.S. to leave following it. What does this mean in regards to the region? If Americans are ordered to leave, will they actually do so, considering there's not a clearly defined mission at this point?
Well, you mentioned military intelligence. You know, military intelligence supports an operational objective, and you build a collection plan. You gather information, you assess it, and then you brief your leaders, military leaders, political leaders. At that point in time, they have to make decisions. This isn't an intelligence-driven war, as Colonel McManus pointed out. Intelligence gave 85 targets, but what was the purpose of the targets? Were you tasked with providing targets that would degrade the mobile relocatable, targeting or targets, the missiles, mobile missiles of the Houthi, or were you tasked with providing 85 points on the ground that could be struck and achieve a political objective of appeasing an American audience that was outraged by, three dead soldiers? We just don't know. Let's look at Syria for a second. Why are we there? Ostensibly, we're there because ISIS originated from Syria, spreading out through Western Iraq to Mosul in 2014 down to Tikrit. We intervened in Iraq with the permission of the Iraqi government to form an anti-ISIS coalition, among of which I need to point out was Iran and the Quds Force. There's an iconic photograph taken outside of Tikrit showing American soldiers on one side of the road and Qasem Soleimani and the Quds leadership on the other side of the road, because we were fighting together, allied against ISIS. We retook Mosul, we push on to the Syrian border, and now we cross into Syria, ostensibly to finish the job. But this is where it gets complicated, because to finish the job, we had to make common cause with a Kurdish force, the YPG. It's all alphabet soup up there, but they are literally an extension of the PKK, another alphabet soup, but those are Turkish Kurdish groups that we call terrorists. And now, in order to fight ISIS, a legitimate terrorist group, we're making common cause with a terrorist group that we've designated, so we rename them the Syrian Democratic Forces. And now we're in this battle, but the Syrian Democratic Forces have control over an important part of Syria, the northeastern part, where oil fields exist, oil fields that had been sustaining ISIS, al-Qaeda, and now we sought to keep, to sustain the Kurdish forces that were now our allies, even though they're terrorists. ISIS has been destroyed, but we were using the Kurdish forces as a mechanism to achieve an unspoken objective: regime change in Damascus. We're seeking to remove Bashar al-Assad from power. We were using, one of the reasons why ISIS existed is because we turned a blind eye to their creation, because we found it to be useful in the process of destabilizing Syria. Now we had to target ISIS, so we had to replace them with something. As ISIS was defeated, the Syrian forces began to expand, and they suddenly were going to take control of the Jordanian border and the Iraqi border. We couldn't allow that to happen, so we moved into Syria, Al-Tanf, a second bastion, where we literally made alliance with the pro-ISIS Syrian tribes in the region, diverting their attention from attacking us to attacking the Syrian government. We are state sponsors of terror on Syrian soil today, and our three soldiers who died in a mission of supporting ISIS terrorists. We call them something different today, but they're ISIS terrorists for the purpose of getting rid of Bashar al-Assad, a mission that the United States Congress has not said is a legitimate mission. So the colonel is 100% correct. We have American service members in harm's way dying for a mission that has no constitutional authority.
And that's the problem right now, because I think I would almost need a diagram for the different groups you were talking about. But Scott brings up is a very good point, that we have actually armed some of the same people that are fighting us. So I go to you, Colonel Manis, on this. How much does the American people understand? Also, how much does the Biden administration understand as they continue to handle the situation with the Houthis? We're going to bring in Yemen into this situation. How much do they recognize what is really happening on the ground?
Well, your second question I'll answer first. I think the Biden administration and the team running the country fully understand, because they're allies of Iran. Okay, that explains some of the moves that they've made. They are allies of Iran. Now, keep in mind what Scott just said. He just called out the American government, which one of its missions it says it has is to prevent the reformation of the ISIS caliphate, and we're actually allied with ISIS supporting terrorists in this region. Think about that. The American people have no idea about that, but the U.S. government does have an idea about that. And those three Americans died without a mission. The second part of the mission, they say, is that we're there to interdict supply lines of the Iranian forces and equipment and material and intelligence going into support Hamas. Well, when's the last time the United States Armed Forces in any way, even in special operations raids, did anything to Iran's logistics and supply lines through that part of the world? I challenge you to find me one independent report that states that we've ever done that. And that's because we have not done that. We are on the wrong side there. We have our people in harm's way intentionally, and they need to be gotten off of that ground right now. We can reset to a strategic location. We have all the capability in the world to do those kinds of things. And if we need to do the things like we're doing in the Red Sea to protect commercial shipping, we have that capability, but we don't have to put our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen in physical danger of incessant and constant attack from the Iranian militias just because they happen to be there and they happen to be backing the wrong side.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break because when we come back, I'm going to continue this conversation. I want to interject into the new things with Israel and what role they're playing, as well as the Biden administration, as they continue to escalate the tensions within the Middle East.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact. Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Welcome back. I'm Sky Nell Hughes, and you are watching the 360 View. Let's bring back in our panel, Colonel Rob Manis, who is a former Air Force Colonel, radio show host, as well as Scott Ritter, a geopolitical analyst, author, and former U.S. military and U.N. inspector. Before the break, we were starting to get into this idea of Israel and the escalating conflict that is going on between Israel and Gaza. How has that affected the dynamic in the Middle East? Is obviously, as you first started out, Scott, talking about was Iran. Where is that changing any of who are our friends or our foes based on the recent events and developments in Israel?
Well, first of all, we have to understand that Israel considers itself to be in a strategic conflict with Iran. But it's a conflict that Israel knows that it cannot militarily initiate and sustain without the assistance of the United States. So one of Israel's strategic objectives has always been to create a scenario that would get the United States to take the lead in military action against Iran that Israel could dovetail on. If the United States determines that Iran poses a threat to our existential survival that warrants military action, so be it. That's an issue that Congress should discuss. And then the American people can get behind if that's the direction we want to go. But I take umbrage at the notion that the United States goes to war because another nation is nudging us in that direction without the advice and consent of Congress or the American people. I'm somebody who spent a lot of time in that region and a lot of time working with Israel. I used to consider Israel to be a friendly nation, despite the USS Liberty attack, despite Jonathan Pollard, despite APAC's intervention in American elections. I felt that we had, common cause in terms of stability. But when you take a look at what Israel is today under the leadership of Benjamin Netanyahu and this far right wing government, I just think the American people need to reflect on who's calling the shots. And it's not the United States government, yet it's American military forces that are being deployed, be called into action. If we need to go to war, if we need to take military action as the United States to protect our vital national security interests, so be it. But we should have an honest discussion about this. Right now, I just think this entire Israeli scenario is a situation that, Israel is foisting on us, and we're getting lured into a trap that, we may find ourselves with a lot more dead Americans and wondering how the heck this happened.
And that is my concern on this, because let me ask Colonel Manis, do you feel like the American people are being told the truth of what exactly is happening within the Gaza and Israel conflict right now and the role that Iran's playing in it? Do you feel like we're being told what is actually happening on the ground?
Well, the American people aren't being told the truth about pretty much any subject these days, Scotty. I mean, and Scott's right. Look, I support the movement of U.S. naval forces into the area at the beginning of this when Hamas crazy people committed their atrocities on October 7th in order to deter other adversaries and bad actors from entering the conflict. But you know what? That deterrence has failed if it was ever established at all. And that requires the United States to take a second look. As Scott said, you know, if we take a second look and do the analysis and see through Iran's actions that they are a serious threat, an existential threat to the United States, or they attack their forces, we obviously have a responsibility to respond to that. But we shouldn't be dancing to any other country's tune, even though we support Israel's right to defend itself based on this October 7th attack. I wholeheartedly support their right to do that, but they don't have any say in what the United States of America does. We're allies. Yes, we communicate and those kind of things, but I'm even opposed to the U.S. giving any money to Israel for this, because they don't need our money. What they need is allied support, and that's what we should be doing. But if our deterrence effort failed already, then we need to be reassessing and figure out what our next steps are, because we don't want any wider regional conflict or worse to happen, especially getting the United States of America and its forces drawn into a conflict that it shouldn't be in the first place.
Well, and I hate doomsday. I hate what-if scenarios. However, I don't think we properly know here in America what exactly is capable of countries like Iran and Israel and in the Middle Eastern countries right now. So I am going to ask you something I normally don't ask my guests. I'm going to ask you, Scott, first. What does a war look like with Iran if the United States went up against it? What, considering the economic sanctions that the U.S. has tried to impose on them over the last few years, what is their actual military capabilities currently? And is this threat that we continue to hear of, a nuclear war, is that something that even Iran would even be considering?
Well, let's just start off by looking at, again, Desert Storm, a conflict, a Desert Shield, Desert Storm, a conflict I'm intimately familiar with. You know, we flowed 750,000 troops into the region. We were able to do so because we had permissive ports. That means we had friendly ports able to receive our shipping. We weren't under fire. We could land our aircraft at airfields that weren't under attack. Today, we don't have 750,000 troops to flow into the region. We've diminished our military capacity tremendously. The colonel mentioned deterrence. You know, the key aspect of deterrence is that the other side needs to be afraid of the consequences of their actions. That, you know, we need to come in and say, if you do X, what we're going to do in response will be so horrible that whatever benefit you think you're getting from X will not exist. We don't have deterrence. Because people are doing whatever they want, and our strikes are not achieving the kind of, you know, horror that they should receive. So we've lost deterrence. So now if we go to war with Iran, understand this. We will need, because Iran is not Iraq. Iran is a very large nation. Iran has an extremely well-developed military capability, including ballistic missiles that can sink American ships. They have that potential. They can strike American airfields in the region, strike American bases in the region. We don't have an adequate response to that. We would need 900 to 1.5 million American troops deployed into the region to have any chance of successfully engaging and defeating Iraq strategically. We don't have that. You know, one of the things that this Houthi exercise has taught us about the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which is the strategic strait in the Red Sea, is the U.S. Navy cannot guarantee that it can keep it open. And now what happens if Iran shuts down the Strait of Hormuz? For years, we've been told by the U.S. Navy, we guarantee that this strait will be open. Iran can't shut it down. No, I think Iran can shut it down, and we don't have the means available. This is where we have to be careful about allowing emotion to get ahead of actual capability. We have our military so degraded today that we project a power that can't be backed up with meaningful force. We cannot do an Operation Desert Storm today, and we would need an Operation Desert Storm on steroids to take care of Iran. Iran's nuclear threat, I don't believe that they have a nuclear weapon. Who knows what the future holds? Israel does have a nuclear weapon. But if we're going to talk about potential Israeli retaliation to Iran in terms of nuclear, then we have to bring in Pakistan. And, you know, Pakistan does have nuclear weapons, and Pakistan has hinted that should Israel strike Iran, Pakistan will strike Israel. And this is a whole different ball game. the United States needs, if we're going to get involved in a military scenario, we need to be able to control that from the outset. We need to be in charge. We need to have the capacity to meet the objectives. And today we simply don't. We're in there. We don't know why we're there. We don't know what we want to accomplish strategically. And we don't have the force necessary to do this. It's a trap. And unfortunately, the people who pay the price, in addition to the people of the region, are those American service members who honored us by taking an oath to protect us, and we're going to put them in harm's way without giving, you know, due diligence to why we're asking them to sacrifice their lives.
Well, and that's very dire, but I really want to appreciate your being honest with us, because I think that's what we need. People need to understand what the consequences of war, this generation especially, who did not necessarily see what happened with Vietnam and post-Vietnam and what the havoc that has wreaked for generations. Colonel Manis, I have to ask you, if Saudi Arabia, what role would Saudi Arabia play if that conflict was to occur, as the layout that Scott described? Where is Saudi Arabia? Are they still our ally? Is it even smart to call them an ally?
Well, I think they've always been a quasi-ally, and it was in their interest to allow us to occupy and build bases inside their territory to take care of the Desert Shield, Desert Storm situation, as Scott pointed out. But one of the things, two of the things that he didn't point out just now are that we also lack not just the capability to get this job done if we go to war with Iran. We lack the political will. If we had the political will, we would have destroyed the Iranian command, control, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance ships that are out in the water aiding the Houthis targeting and command and control and which targets to hit. And we didn't, we chose not to do that specifically. So we don't have the political will. And if we were to get into an all-out conflict on Iran proper, with all of the requirements that Scott just laid out, we would absolutely and utterly fail. And here's the big reason why, not just the political will, is we don't have the military industrial base needed to even keep up with the amount of rounds that the Ukrainians are getting. And we are not replenishing our supplies that we expended during Afghanistan. And we continue to create more problems for our military industrial base, who can't keep up with the production needed to fight the war in Ukraine. Whether you believe in it or not, those are the facts. So we wouldn't be able to last more than about 72 hours to a week, more than likely, if we were to go into an Iran war proper. It would be an absolute disaster.
And Rob, Colonel Manis and Scott, I think we can all agree, we're just talking about the United States involvement. If there was a conflict that seriously broke out, there's a lot of other countries that have interest that would also be involved, and what lines in the sand would be drawn. I want to thank both of you. We could go on for hours as we're just hitting the surface of this issue, but I appreciate you sharing your insight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There is nothing more heart-wrenching than watching a family dressed all in black, waiting along the tarmac to receive a coffin draped in a country's flag off the cargo hold of the airplane. Now, that same family gathered in pride to send their loved one off to a mission in the Middle East, thinking they were doing something to help make the world a safer place. Now their hero returns. But instead of being greeted with tears of joy, it's tears of deep sorrow. Sadly, the West doesn't show these images to the people or what life is like for the injured and their families for generations. Where is the follow-up to all of those who served in Afghanistan and their stories of what they saw, were instructed to do, and how life changed when they returned to America? I think this is all done on purpose. As those who are so quick to use the American military to protect their own interests like oil don't want their pawns seen as actual human beings. The Middle East has always been a powder keg, and unfortunately, it seems some in the West are waiting for an opportune moment to strike the match. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news affecting you. Thanks for watching.